Welcome to Issues and Ideas.
So the language of flowers is actually a language or a system that was used in Victorian times. And it was basically a system where every flower was assigned a very specific meaning. Red rose symbolizes love. Mistletoe symbolizes I overcome. And rhododendron means beware.
Today, we're going to join a wide-ranging discussion that includes, among other things, something about the language of flowers.
They used to think attachment disorder was a diagnosis that was almost impossible to overcome, but they now believe that with certain kinds of therapies, you can sort of rebuild the brain, which is very exciting.
And we'll get a little insight into the problem of foster children. Plus, we'll hear more of Chrissy Hewitt and Stephen DeLuque's conversation with painter and photographer Dorothy Cutter. But first, let's go to the library.
Hello, this is Brian Reynolds, San Luis Obispo County Library Director for Issues and Ideas on KCBX, public radio for the Central Coast. Today, we are joined by author Vanessa Diffenbaugh, author of The Language of Flowers, who is going to be making a presentation on the Central Coast soon, and Denise Forey, librarian at Cuesta Community College and a committee member for that San Luis Obispo County Reads program, and Christine Tardif, library manager for the San Luis Obispo County Library. Welcome, everybody.
Thanks.
Good morning. Yeah.
Today, we're going to be talking about a multitude of topics, the novel Language of Flowers, the foster care system, some of the symbology or symbolism of flowers, and also maybe a little bit about publishing and how that works, which I'm sure is an interesting process. Denise, could we start with you a little bit about San Luis Obispo County Reads and how it began?
Well, there's a partnership in the last couple of years between your public library system and their SLO Reads, and then our college, our community college system, Cuesta College, and our Book of the Year. And what happened is, 4 or 5 years ago, Cuesta began kind of this new community Reads program called Book of the Year. And the way, what we're often asked about is, how do we choose a book? Well, we're looking for something that can be of interest and a growth experience for students at a two-year community college, as well as bring in the public, so public library patrons, and the public at large. So we came up with this Book of the Year program that looks for something meaty, not just good reads, but themes like, in this case with Vanessa's, foster children aging out of the system, families at risk. So we look for a book like that, and then we're also interested in something that we can spin programs around, just as we have with your libraries and our libraries, to take that topic or set of topics out to the public.
That's wonderful. Denise, could you tell us when the event is going to happen so maybe people could write it on their calendars?
Sure. Good idea, Brian. The main event, that is Vanessa's free presentation lecture, we'll also have a reception with some snacks and books to buy and book signing, will be on Wednesday, February 27th from 5 to 7 p.m. And that's at the San Luis campus of Cuesta College on Highway 1. We actually have a parking lot roped off for the event parking, so that's complimentary. And it is parking lot, I think it's
two.
Parking lot 2.
Thank it's you. At the Performing Arts Center at Cuesta.
Yes, at the CPAC. Mm.
And
yeah.
It's free. That's an important thing.
It is free. It's funded by our foundation, and your library system contributes. And it's a collaborative activity.
Great.
Fun.
Well, Vanessa, welcome, and let's jump right into talking about the book. You talk about sort of this intricate language of flowers that goes back to Victorian times. What exactly is the language of flowers?
Sure. Well, thanks so much for having me, and I'm so excited to come to San Luis Obispo. I've been a number of times. When my husband was a high school principal, we would always take college trips to see your campus, and it was always one of the favorites. So I'm looking forward to returning.
Okay. I hope the sun comes out before you get here, because
it's
kind
of cold
and rainy
today. I hope so, too. I need some
sun
out here in Boston. It's been a little dreary. So the language of flowers is actually a language or a system that was used in Victorian times, mostly in Europe, but it did make its way to the United States and also even as far as Asia, Japan, and China. And it was basically a system where every flower was assigned a very specific meaning. So a lot of people might know that red rose symbolizes love. But in this system, mistletoe symbolizes I overcome all obstacles. And rhododendron means beware. And I could go on and on and on and on. There are hundreds and hundreds of flowers and definitions. And it's really a fun language the more you learn about it. Not only does every flower have a meaning, but there's usually a very specific reason, either from history or poetry or mythology, for that reason.
So was the point that they have some type of magical or healing quality? Or like in your book, it seems as if almost that, especially with Victoria, the flowers tend to be a language that she speaks, almost it's magical, it's healing almost.
Yeah, you know? I think you're right, and I do get that question a lot. But for me, it was more that the flowers sort of symbolized the desire for the people that Victoria was working with, and sort of made that desire real and physical and something that they could focus on. And it wasn't as much that the flowers were magical, but more that sort of setting that intention and that belief and setting your focus on that really does have the power to transform.
Mm-hmm. So where did the idea of the novel come from? This is your debut novel, is it correct?
It is my first novel, yes. Yeah. And it was really a combination. I absolutely set out to tell Victoria's story. So Victoria's the main character, and the book starts on her 18th birthday when she's emancipating from the foster care system. And Victoria really came to me absolutely whole. I knew who she was and her story, and I was very interested in this idea of attachment disorders and what happens to children when they're not loved from that very moment of birth. So that was the story I really wanted to tell, but when I sat out to write it, and that's my favorite thing about fiction is you sort of never know what's going to happen. The very first scene I wrote, which is not the first scene in the book, was where Victoria sees a man look at her in a way that makes her very uncomfortable. And instead of responding with words, she just sort of left and came back a week later with a flower. And I hadn't premeditated it. The language of flowers was something I'd always loved. And when I had this character who sort of didn't know how to reach out or communicate, it really made a lot of sense for me as the writer to give her this language that nobody understands.
That's sort of not a defense mechanism, but it's where she feels safe, right?
Yeah, it's where she feels safe, and it's, you know, nobody responds because they don't know what she's saying, and they don't usually know that she's even saying anything at all. So it's like the absolute safest way to try to make a connection with someone.
Did you set out to write a novel about the foster care system? I mean, when you originally thought about the novel, was it your love of flowers and the language of flowers,
or was it about always foster? About foster care first for me?
Okay.
Although I do love the language of flowers, and I've loved the research and talking about it, and I think a lot of people do connect to the flower part of the book. But for me, the book was always about foster care, and I've been a foster parent for many years, and I felt like I had some very specific things I wanted to sort of look at.
One of the things that drew us to choosing your book, Vanessa, was that whole theme of foster care. We try to choose books that have a community theme that maybe they don't know about or they can certainly grow from. And I mean, I've learned a lot just in planning this event. I have to say I only knew one foster kid in high school, and he had a pretty negative story to tell. So this has given me a much broader introduction to that whole world.
That's wonderful. And I get that a lot, especially around this issue of aging out. I think a lot of people think about babies in foster care or little kids, and I think most people just assume they either go back home or get adopted. But the truth is we have this population of 20,000 to 30,000 kids every year that turn 18 and were never adopted and never went back home and really are entering the world as adults without families. And that's really the story of Victoria.
Yeah. This is Brian, Vanessa. Is it true that when these 18-year-olds emancipate that they're pretty much without a support system or any way to help themselves transition to adulthood?
I think that is by far the most common case. Obviously, there are exceptions. But up until very recently, on their exact 18th birthday in every state, kids were pushed out of the system even if they had absolutely nowhere to go, even if that meant packing up their bags and standing on the street corner. California is one of the states that just very recently is trying to change that so that you can opt in and stay in the foster care system until you're 21, as long as you're, I think, pursuing education. There are a few things you have to be doing, but it's a really great thing, because how many of our own 18-year-olds were ready to be completely independent, or ourselves, if you remember yourself at 18? You know, I started a nonprofit called Camellia Network, and we had this wonderful article written by us on the Oprah blog, and, you know, the writer said something like, I was completely ready to go on my own at 18, absolutely 100%, as long as I had a dorm room and a meal plan and, you know, my parents could fix my car when it broke down and all those other things that we do for our 18-year-olds. And imagine trying to do something really hard, like be on your own for the first time without that.
How might that be fixed? Are there any ideas or any techniques or any examples of how that a problem could be addressed, Vanessa?
Yeah, I mean, individual communities all over the country have a few specific things. There's something called Youth Villages that's stronger out here on the East Coast that does a lot of work to try to keep kids actually in the home and provide incredible support services for biological families to keep kids so that they're not ever entering the system and aging out. So that's one thing that people are excited about. I think really recruiting and training more adoptive families that are willing to take even older kids is important. You know, as our culture, we think of adopting babies, but we don't necessarily think of teenagers that really could use and really want families. So we started Camellia Network because we felt like there are a lot of people in the country that would want to do something but couldn't necessarily make the full commitment to adopt or foster a child. And Camellia Network really allows people to go online, see who these kids are, what their goals are for the future, and then what they need to be successful, kids that are turning 18 and aging out, and allows them to buy something off a registry or offer up some kind of a opportunity, whether it's a job or an interview or an internship, that kind of thing. Really just sort of a crowdsourcing of both monetary resources but also of opportunities.
And actually, Vanessa, some of the people that we've been working with to put on this Book of the Year SLO Reads program, the Department of Social Services, our county agency, and the Independent Living Program and Foster Kinship Care Education Program out at our college have been very involved in trying to work with you on populating some of that Camellia Network stuff. So
yeah,
I'm not sure where
we're
are, but
to get a bunch of kids from San Luis Obispo on the site so that when I'm there, I can say, there are kids right here in your community trying to do these amazing things, and let's all come together to support them. That's great.
This is Brian Reynolds, San Luis Obispo County Library Director for Issues and Ideas on KCBX Public Radio for the Central Coast, and today we are discussing the language of flowers and foster care and an upcoming event at Cuesta College with author of the book, Language of Flowers, Vanessa Diffenbaugh, Denise Forey, librarian at Cuesta Community College, and Christine Tardif, library manager for the San Luis Obispo County Library.
Vanessa, I think I read an interview or heard an interview online where you talked about one foster child, a young lady who was one that you felt you said that you and your husband weren't able to save. Is Victoria based a little bit on foster care kids that you've known, or particularly on this young lady?
It's really a compilation. You know, I was inspired by so many different kids. People often ask about my son Trayvon because he lived with us for 5 years, and you know, want to know what in Victoria is from Trayvon, and really those two people could not be more different. Trayvon just sort of reaches out and latches on and is full of joy and life, and there were many others that did not have such an easy time reaching out, and she was certainly one of them. She was with us for almost a year, and she told us the day she moved in that she had never been anywhere more than a year, and she wasn't going to be with us more than a year either. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, at the time I thought, absolutely you will, you know, like we're not those kind of people. We're not going to give up on you. But it was really, really, really hard. And it ended up at the end, you know, she came to us and said she didn't want to be there anymore. And, you know, I knew I should say, absolutely you're going to be here and you're going to stay forever and I'm going to love you forever. But I was so exhausted and heartbroken, and I had a new baby, and I felt like that wasn't working for her or for anyone. And so you know, she moved out, and she would come and leave us letters about how much she missed us or how much she hated us, you know. Mm-hmm. But we sort of did what we could, and I think it's an important story to tell because I also have these other kids that have these incredible happy outcomes, and I think people just say, oh, well, she's, you know, special, and I couldn't do that. But the truth is that we failed a lot, too, and the only reason is that we've succeeded is because we keep trying.
Vanessa, is there a certain time in a child's life? You mentioned earlier that a child needs to know they're loved from really the day one after their birth. But is there a time after which intervention is harder, or are there certain circumstances where it makes healing with the child more difficult or more easy?
Wow, that's such a good question. So there's something called resiliency theory that basically is trying to understand why, you know, everyone who comes into foster care has been neglected, abused, abandoned in some way. And so they've all faced trauma. And so resiliency theory is really trying to understand how come someone like Trayvon can have a very, 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 that's my older son who's at NYU, how come he can have this incredibly traumatic experience and be resilient and come out and still be able to be loved and give love and be motivated and all these things. And then how come some kids would face the same trauma and it would, you know, break them in a different way? And they don't really know, but I think there are sort of protective factors that help some kids be resilient and others not. One of them is just what you said, which is being loved and establishing a bond and the ability to attach right from birth. There's a place here at Harvard called the Center for the Developing Child that is doing all this research on brain development and how the brain actually doesn't form and grow the way that yours or I would if those first sort of call and response of attachment are not formed, which is really fascinating research and makes me want to adopt like 10 babies. My husband's not so into it.
So can you tell us a little bit about what attachment disorder is?
Sure. So attachment disorder is exactly what I was describing. If you're not loved and cared for in those very first months of life, the synapses in your brain actually don't connect. And so learning to give and receive love, which does have a biological component in the brain, is actually very hard to do. The most recent research shows that the brain continues to develop far into adulthood, and so it is possible. They used to think attachment disorder was a diagnosis that was almost impossible to overcome, but they now believe that with certain kinds of therapies, you can sort of rebuild the brain, which is very exciting.
So can you tell us what role food plays for Victoria? Because, I mean, it's a language of flowers, but certainly reading it, it almost seems like a food plays quite a role.
I got hungry during
several,
you know, when she's eating the curry.
I didn't notice that. As the writer, you're totally oblivious to certain things. And that's the first thing my agent said was like, why is she always eating? And I had never even noticed. But that is really a big deal with a lot of kids who have been traumatized. It's just one of the absolute basics. If you don't have food, you really can't think about anything else. And so many of the kids we've worked with, you know, I take them to the grocery store, I let them buy anything they want, which I would never do with my biological kids, right? And I let them eat whenever, whatever they want, and they still would carry food around the house, you know, in their pockets, in their backpacks. It was just a security thing.
Well, it's to feel full.
Yeah.
I mean, I think once they that emptiness, it's just filled up with food because...
Well, and being worried about where is your next meal coming
from?
Right,
yeah, the hoarding.
On the street or whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, it seems like Victoria would almost need to fall asleep after these big meals as if she was full now.
That's
and
awesome.
she finally could, you know, sort of just release a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
This is Brian Reynolds, San Luis Obispo County Library Director for Issues and Ideas on KCBX, Public Radio for the Central Coast. Today we're discussing the language of flowers and San Luis Obispo County Reads and an upcoming event, an author event at Cuesta Community College. We're discussing issues with the author of Language of Flowers, Vanessa Diffenbaugh. We also have with us Denise Forey, librarian for Cuesta Community College, and Christine Tardif, library manager for the San Luis Obispo County Library. Vanessa, I'd like to shift gears a little bit. Can we talk a little bit about the publishing of your book and how that worked for you and any challenges you had or advice you might have for other budding authors?
Sure. I actually have very good advice, which I wrote this book in Sacramento, California. I didn't know a single person in New York, not to mention the publishing world. But I had been to Stanford, and so I knew enough about the world that I knew that you had to know the right people, and I didn't know any of the right people. So I was reading this book called The Middle Place by Kelly Corrigan, which is a wonderful book, and it was published by this company, Hyperion, and the tagline for Hyperion is something like smart books for smart women, something like that. And I thought to myself, ooh, that's my audience. I need to send them my manuscript. So this is how little I knew about how publishing works. You actually don't need a publisher first. You need an agent, but I didn't even know that. So I looked at Kelly Corrigan's website because I thought, well, maybe if I get to know her, she can send my book to her publisher. And I saw that she's from Northern California. She was speaking in the Bay Area. She was speaking at a foster care event. So I bought a ticket.
Wow.
And went to meet her. By just the grace of, the universe, I was placed at her table. And I started talking to her about the book, and I gave her a fan letter. It's the only time I've ever written a fan letter. And I asked her if she'd send it to her publisher, and she said, well, actually, you need an agent, and I'll send it to her, but she'll only take 3 pages. Like, she was one of those New York agents that says on her website, do not send me anything, I will destroy it and not send it back to you. So she took 3 pages, then she took 5 pages, then she took the whole book, and then she rejected it. But I felt like, wow, that was a really good strategy because I got a real agent in New York to read it. And so I found another local author in Sacramento, and that person sent my book in, and that agent is now my agent. So I think go to author events and meet authors, and, agents are always looking for great work, and sometimes you just have to get to them.
Tell us about some of the reactions you've had about your book.
Well, the most surprising for me has just been that the international response. So my book sold here to Random House, and then my agent sold it in 40 translations, which was just phenomenal. And I was raised in Chico, California, and I'd been out of the country once. And it basically meant that for a year, my husband and my 2 kids, and for part of the time, Trayvon, got to go to 5 or 6 or 7 countries in Europe on this incredible book tour. So that was really fun. And then to see what people were responding to, in UK they loved the flowers, and in Italy they were all about the kids, and in different countries they had all kinds of different questions based on what was happening in their own foster or care system. So that was fascinating.
So what has most surprised you about the book's success?
I think everything. I mean, when you're a first-time author writing fiction, all you hear over and over and over again is nobody buys fiction anymore, no one even reads books anymore. And
what?
I didn't believe that to be true, because I read books and I buy books, and and I read everything on the bestseller list and kept saying I can do better than this, so I was really motivated, and my husband was really supportive. But I never ever in 100 years could have expected this. It's been nice.
We sort of highlight some of our upcoming events, if that's okay, Vanessa.
Sure.
I'll talk a little bit about some of the things at the county libraries, and then Denise can talk about Equesta. By the time this airs, we will already have had several book discussions. We have Family Care Network coming, talking about foster care and maybe, taking a foster care into your home. We have gardening and floral design classes and quite a few book discussions. Morro Bay's book discussion on the 20th. Oro Grande has a book discussion on the 15th and the 26th. And again, the Family Care Network will be visiting several libraries, and they'll be February 23rd, they'll be at the Oro Grande Library. So I'll let Denise talk about some of the events at Equesta.
Let me give you all, first of all, a website that you can go to, and from that website you can link both to the San Luis County Reads events as well as to the Equesta events. And that is library.equesta, and that's Equesta.edu/book. And again, that will link you to the posters for both the county library activities as well as the Equesta College activities. Well, we're certainly looking forward to Vanessa as our main event, but we also have a series of 6 films that we'll be showing at both the Equesta North County campus as well as the San Luis main campus. And we've tried to incorporate both the foster child themes as well as the floral themes in both our film festival and our workshops, panel, and other activities. One of the films we'll be showing is The Kid with a Bike, which is a recent French film and a Cannes winner, or Le Gamin au Vélo. And French students from Questo are going to be attending that. I think they have to go. It's a homework assignment. We've got a workshop, too, that Vanessa will be at just prior to her author appearance on the 27th. This is from 1 to 2:30 on the Questa College San Luis campus, and this is called Stepping Up for Emancipating Foster Youth. And this, again, will have care providers, foster youth testimony, and should talk about how we as a county can help. And these are all free events.
So, again, you want to give that website one more time?
Yes, library.questa.edu/book.
And then there's a lot of the county events, including the ones at the libraries. You can also get it at slowlibrary.org on our events page. So, Vanessa, I want to ask you, what would you hope that people would take away or do or understand from your book?
Well, I think that's been the most exciting thing for me about this book. You know, I really wrote it because I had a story to tell, and I told that story in a way that people have all over the country said to me, I'm feeling passionate and understanding foster care for the first time, and what can I do to help? And so I think there's so many things you can do. If you can't be a foster parent yourself, find someone who is, because I feel like foster parents are, you know how hard parenting is. It's just the same thing. It's the same thing, only a little harder, because you need people to be fingerprinted and all there to babysit and all that kind of stuff. So if you can, you know, give a foster parent a date night or cook them a meal, if you go to Camellia Network and check out who the kids are aging out in California and see how you can support them, CASA is a great organization. I know that there are a million local organizations in San Luis Obispo that I don't know about that are doing amazing work, and you can volunteer and donate. And for me, the exciting thing about foster care is I actually think it's a problem that we can solve. There aren't that many kids, given how much potential there is for people to want to help.
Vanessa, is there usually a go-to agency in the community where a person interested in these issues can find out more information?
You know, there's not. The county administers foster care in California, and there are some private agencies. I think that's one of the big problems we found when we started doing our work, is there really isn't anything centralized. Does anyone on the call have an example of an organization in San Luis Obispo that might be a great one for people to look into?
Well, the Family Network.
The Family Care Network.
Family Care Network is a private, and then the County Department of Social Services, and then again the Questa Independent Living Program, which is state-sponsored.
Yeah, all are fabulous. Good places to look to get involved.
Hi. This is Brian Reynolds, San Luis Obispo County Library Director for Issues and Ideas on KCBX, Public Radio for the Central Coast. I would like to thank our guests today. We are discussing The Language of Flowers and San Luis Obispo County Reads Project. We've been joined by the author of that book, Vanessa Diffenbaugh, Denise Forey, librarian from Questa Community College, and library manager for the San Luis Obispo County Library, Christine Tardif. Thank you, everyone.
You're listening to Issues and Ideas on KCBX. In a moment, we'll go from the library to the artist studio. But first, this word. Support for KCBX comes from Moran Brothers Automotive, encouraging you to keep your vehicle in the best state of repair possible for safety and reliability. More at 541-2407 or online at morinbros.com. Next week on Issues and Ideas, my theme will be food. It won't be on its preparation and dining. We'll leave that to the splendid table, which you hear every Monday at this time. Next week's Issues and Ideas will be on the local production and distribution of food. We're going to learn a bit about sustainable agriculture in our area, visit a farm being created right inside San Luis Obispo for sustainable agriculture, and go behind the scenes at some of our farmers' markets. That's next week on Issues and Ideas.